diversify. We are seated today with most members are doing the constituency work, their own resources. But nonetheless, it's because of that commitment. I want to thank the members, you know, for that commitment, taking that extra effort to ensure that we deal with this need. The other issue that I need to remind, particularly Honourable Ndlozi not here, Honourable Ndlozi and Honourable Tsotetsi, because they are the ones affected by this. I'm reminding you again, Honourable Tsotetsi, especially yourself, because two members are many. The members that had been sent to full-time or part-time in the Portfolio Committee on Communications have to undergo the process of the NTC. That process we have to deal with if we so choose. I remember Honourable Ndlozi, Honourable Shibambo wrote me a letter that he will be an alternate member. So Honourable Ndlozi, fortunately for him, it is the chief whip. He has to deal with ATC himself, and you have to deal with the members from your party who have to eat it. With yourself, Honourable Davis, everything is okay. Your alternate member is also a member of the Portfolio Committee. So this will help the Portfolio Committee to deal with arrangements. They cannot book accommodation flights for members who are not officially ATC within the Portfolio Committee. And I'm going to request the members, if they can sort it today, that will help us. You know, and can you kindly remind Honourable Joseph is not here, but I did raise the issue yesterday. Okay. Now, Honourable Members, as I did indicate, in terms of the interviews that we conducted yesterday, we have gone through the 11 candidates, and we interviewed Yengwayo Huta, William Roland, Titwana Mutripe, Thomas Nzewa, Palisa Kaji, Olwethu Sipuka, Vuyelwa Mdazana, Tel Masego, Chavulani Blose, Kebetri Mudimuini, and Mahmoud Saleh. We did those interviews yesterday. We are remaining with the only two candidates that will be in this order. It's Nobubele Pelese Madova and Isaac Tamkhana Ntenten. Those are the two remaining ones. We will start with the process of the interview and finalize it so that we can sit at the end. I'm worried, Honourable Members, I can't see Honourable Ndlozi. Is there an indication of coming? Can we then request that we... Are you already members? Can we can all go through Nobubele's... We'll only give you 2 minutes to do that. At 9:40 we'll be starting with our next candidate. Get 2 minutes to get the thingy. The number. The number. The number. Thank you. Mr. Ford, I'm sure we can call the candidate, Lobubele Majo. Good morning, Lobubele Belez Majova. Good morning, Chairperson. I've called your name right.
Yes, it is.
Good morning to you and welcome. We appreciate that you have made it to the interviews, responding to a nomination. We are going to undergo an interview, which we are appealing to you to just be relaxed, also on that information, to tap all the information that we have, so that it assists us at the end to make a decision, who finally will be requested by the subcommittee to help us on the MDTA board. So just feel as relaxed as possible. I'm going to introduce the members that will be doing this interview to you. They are 5 in number, and the 6th, we will have another 7th one coming. We're going to take 45 minutes, so all members have a question. So just you should be able to just bring around your time, you know, so that you, the 45 minutes every member has asked the question. Let me start there in the corner. That is Honorable Giga. Honorable Giga, can you look at the ballot? Yes, so that you see that is you, and this is Honorable Zaidi. And then that is Honorable So David, please look at her. This is Honorable Madisha. I was watching. Okay, and that's Honorable David. I am Moloi Muropa, and you've got all whole 45 minutes. Just before I start with the first question, I would need to also indicate to you that you're actually welcome. Please, we are requesting that we should not use the camera, please. But you can, we are home. Stay in here. Please, we started yesterday with the interviews and we're just finalizing 2 candidates remaining. It's not a problem. Okay. Now, Lobubele, Ms. Majora, like I was still explaining, post that we're interviewing for,
Breaking with an MDA element is three. Two of them are a full growth. One of them, we're filling up a resignation post, so it's not full term. It's within the term that the person resigned had. If the person remained with 2 years, then it's just that 2 years. If it's 18 months, it's that 18 months. It's not really two of them full-time, one not. So all of you that we're interviewing are going to select amongst yourself. If you have selected, the subcommittee will then decide who takes full, who fills up the term. Yes. Okay. Now I think we can start with our questions. The first question that I would like to ask you.
You can ask for water.
How? How can you ask for water? Sorry about the chair. It's like we're not welcoming you. Yeah, but thanks that you asked. Oh, yeah, there's water. The difficulty is that, Mr. Majova, if Parliament is on recess, it's so difficult to get things around. You know, we're, you know, trying our level best because we don't have a fully fledged functional Parliament, so don't worry about it too much. And then in future, everything will just be organized. Now, let's start with the first question. In fact, the member that has said will be joining us has arrived at the back there. There is Honorable Ndlozi. So, yeah, that's the seventh member who's also going to ask the question. Okay. Thank you. For the first question, we'll just need you to do an introduction of yourself. You introduce yourself to us so that we know you better. We've gone through CV, we've, you know, read motivations and all, but we just need to hear you. You introduce yourself, you relate your introduction to your qualifications, to your experience, and the expertise within this interview.
Thank you, Chairperson. My name is Belese. I go by the name of Belese Majora, not Belese, my other name. I matriculated in 1991. I went to St. John's College in Umtata, and from there I went to the University of Transkei and completed my degree in 1994. I went and did my articles for Chartered Accountancy, but I completed them. But I didn't put it to the best thought. I started working, I did my articles at PwC and Deloitte. I then worked for Transnet as an audit manager. Post-Transnet, I worked for a company that was an American company called South African Development Agency. After that, I went and worked for the city of Johannesburg. I was the financial director in one of their divisions. Predominantly I would say my experience is largely in the area of finance, audit and risk. I've been sit on the board of a listed mining company, where I'm the chairperson of the Social and Ethics Committee. I also sit on the same board as an Audit and Risk Committee member. I also chair a board of an gas company. It's actually based in Cape Town. I'm currently running my own organization. It's a myriad of activities that we do there. One of them is consulting. We consult mainly with the municipalities, and we also do farming, we also do transportation. So in a nutshell, I think I would say my experience and background is around the areas of finance. I think I'm very good at my finance. I'm also very good in my audit and risk areas. So in a nutshell, I think that's me. Thank you.
Thank you very much. Can I just find out from you, your understanding of the Media Development and Diversity Act? Your understanding? If you can also reflect the weaknesses and the strengths thereof.
Thank you, Chairperson. My understanding is that the agency itself, well, I guess the act started before the agency, is to obviously close the gaps that were there or are still there. Because in a country like South Africa, which is a new democracy, you would have a community which is previously disadvantaged that would not have been able to access the media fraternity. So the act, as the way I've read it and understood, is that first and foremost is to redress those imbalances. I don't know if maybe I could sort of give my understanding. One of the objectives talks about the ownership and control. And it talks about the development and capacitation of your previously disadvantaged. And for me, I think that is a strength. But where I think the weakness is, I think perhaps for me, from where I'm sitting and the way I've read the act, the act itself does not give a period as to when should this happen. And I think if you don't have time frames and you have a person who's moving at a snail's pace, you can take forever to sort of redress whatever you want to redress. So I think for me that is one of the weaknesses that I think in the act, that it doesn't talk to the time frames of when this should happen. And I think the other strength though of the act is the fact that it's talking about communities that are not covered within the normal a media space, that it prioritizes that. Thank you.
Thank you very much, Mrs. Machova. Honorable Kikan.
Me, Machova, yes. I just want to ask you one or two questions. Yeah. I wanted to understand that what can you do to ensure that media diversity is safeguarded and accepted at MDA, and what strategies can you deploy to make sure that in the MDA both nurturing and safeguarding are implemented. Thank you.
Thank you, Honorable Kekan. For me, I think the nurturing and the safeguarding of the MDDA and what it stands for would obviously be key and critical, because if one doesn't, it means we would not have queried the mandate of the act and the implementation or creation of the agency itself. It also means for me that for you to matter and safeguard that mandate, you would need to abide by the act, what it says the objectives in that act, that it clearly says what the objectives are. And the act has got a very beautiful mission statement. It talks about Ubuntu. It talks about developmental and commitment. It talks about integrity. If those values are not kept, invariably you would not be safeguarding and serving the MDA act and the agency itself. The strategies that I think I would put in place or assist in putting them in place to ensure that the act and the agency that the strategies for me would be for the board to be robust. And by that I mean, I would imagine that you would need a board that has a diverse people, not only people from the media fraternity. You need that because that's the core business of the agency. But you also need people that have got skill sets from other areas, i.e. myself, who's got finance skill. You also need other role players. Because invariably, if I'm a believer that the fish was from the head. If the board is not properly structured and the mandate will fall by the wayside. Once the board is properly constituted with the relevant skill set, and they will obviously assist the management and the CEO in running the organization and in ensuring that the mandate of the MBDA is carried through, that mandate obviously talks to the safeguarding and the nurturing of that mandate itself. Thank you.
Honorable Zedi.
Morning, Ms. Silva. Are you fine? Okay. Or Nobe. Nobube. Okay. No, thank you. In the media fraternity, we talk of print and electronic media. What distinctions do you see between the two? And do you think they serve a different purpose in society?
Thank you, Honorable. For me, I think there is a difference between print and electronic, and print is obviously your printed newspapers and other forms of printed journals and all that. And electronic is the electronic version of that. I think there is a difference, but I think they both serve the same purpose. It's just that I think the accessibility thereof is an issue, especially if you're talking electronic. A person who comes from the rural Transkei like myself might not have the means and ways to access the electronic version of the print media, of the media, but might all be able to buy newspaper, whether it's the digital special, or whatever. But I think the purpose is the same. Though the electronic media, the advantage is that the things are instant, they happen, you know, as in they are on the time, whereas your print media tends to be delayed. So you tend to get today's news tomorrow. Well, in electronic version, you get them instantly. Like in News 24 and other forms of electronic media.
Thank you. Can you proceed to Honorable Ndlozi?
Thank you, Chairperson. I just have two questions. One is to do with media literacy and e-literacy, their role in promoting equality among citizens, and what MBDA could do to promote it. And then finally, could you quickly give us your take and analysis of the media, community media environment in South Africa today, and how it might be as well affected by DTT? Digital. Thank you. Thank you.
Thanks, Honorable George. I didn't know what DT is. I crossed that bit. But you've educated me, nevertheless. Media literacy and illiteracy, for me, it means Okay, now I'm going to ask a favor from you to repeat that question for me. I forgot in it.
Whether it's all or the first one. No, the significance of media and electronic literacy in promotion of equality amongst citizens and the role of MBDA.
Thank you, Honorable Ndlozi. I think I'm a believer in the sense that media plays a huge role in awareness for its citizens. A lot of things that are happening, if there was no media, we would not know of them. Especially for an average citizen like myself, you wouldn't get to know them. So in that way, media is really at the center of the literacy or lack thereof. So a robust and media is plays a huge role in informing a citizen, but obviously there is a fine line between what that information is. It would obviously need a kind of citizen that is able to sift that which comes his or her way. I think the role of MDDA is very key, because MDDA, I think at the key or at the core of MDDA, it talks about communities, it talks about previously disadvantaged. So MDDA's mandate is addressing the people that are not as affluent in terms of accessing and being able to sift that information, or even access it for that matter. And number two, you asked me to an analysis of the media communication space. I think if one were to look at MDDA and its role and the mandate that it carries, I think in fact, I think for me it's a good thing that there is an MDDA, because I do not believe that if we didn't have MDDA, you would find that communities that are in the far-flung areas of our country may not have had or access to some of the information or all of the information that they need to have. You have community radio stations, and you've got community projects that obviously would not have been picked up or in the domain of your normal media. So MDDA is obviously addressing such gap, as it were. Thank you.
Okay, can we then proceed to Honorable Madisha?
Okay, thank you very much. I listened to you very carefully. You spoke about, as you put it, my experience in finance, in audit, and risk management and so on. Now, what one would want to further hear from you is, yes, albeit you may be aware or be having knowledge so far as all this are concerned, the mere knowledge does not imply the actual capacity to manage those who work under your supervision. And here, Chairperson, I'm talking about a very big infrastructure. Okay. Now, how would you apply the already existing policies? And of course, more with policies will still come to ensure that the MDDA was properly boosted, the center down there, so on, to make sure that there are no problems altogether. I don't know if the question is clear. I'll put it into...
The question is very clear, Honorable Madison. Thank you. The question is, how would I apply the policies that already exist at the MDDA and ensure that they work properly at all levels? I think that's what last. As a board member, I'm not sure whether I should answer as a board member, but I think I will answer as a board member, because I think that's the position I am applying for. I will not answer as a CEO, I'll touch on that, but largely as a board member. My role as a board member is to ensure that good corporate governance is adhered to at all times. My role, again, is to ensure that the policies of the agency, MDDA, are kept and are adhered to at all consultants, where there are there's lack of adherence, obviously there would be an explanation as to why. I usually bought meats at least 4 times a year, and at those meetings, the management of the executive will bring us reports that suggest that the company is operating at optimal, and that the policies have not been contravened. My role is also to support the CEO and the management of the agency to ensure that the existing policies are adhered to. However, the policies also need to be reviewed on a periodic basis. One, for its relevance, that is, policy is still relevant, and also that the policy is still applicable, because some act, whether of Parliament or any other institution, might render the policy, you know, useless for the lack of a better word. So on a periodic basis, the policies need to be reviewed for their relevance and applicability. So I think safe to say that you would have different policies in a company. You have your financial policies, you have your HR policies, you have your policies about the core business of the business. So CEO would be entrusted with those powers as the accounting authority to ensure that the mandate of MDA is carried out. Thank you.
Okay. Thanks very much. Can I proceed on this? Honourable Davis.
Thank you, Chairperson. I have two questions. The first one is, in what instances do you think that press freedom should be limited, if ever? And the second question is, are you currently a member of a political organization, or have you ever been a member of a political organization? Thank you.
Thanks, Honorable Davis. In what instance should press freedom be limited? Okay. I do not believe that the press should be limited, because if you limit the press, you are obviously limiting the flow of information and the knowledge of citizens. So I do not believe that there should be such a limitation to the press freedom. In fact, I think press is one of those organizations or bodies that should be independent to be able to report free and fair, and obviously with responsibilities. The second question was, am I a member of a political organization? I'm not a member of a political organization, but I do vote. Thank you.
Thank you very much. Honorable Sotipa.
Thank you very much, Chairperson, and good morning. Yeah, you have alluded to
the mic towards yourself.
You have alluded to the need for a robust media. Can you elaborate on that robustness? If we perceive or see the media as robust, how is it that you'll be, you know, so visible to say the media is robust? And currently, do you see the media as being free and fair?
Thank you, Honorable Tosipi. I'm actually putting as soon as I drop, but there was nothing to respond to that. But nevertheless, I think my understanding, my divine meaning of the word robust media says. The media, I think the previous honorable Davis asked the question whether I think the media should be limited in doing their work. I think for me, to follow on that, a robust media is a media that is free and fair. A robust media for me also means a media that is responsible in reporting and is accountable for the information that it puts out there. Accountable, I mean, obviously we've got different groups of people, I mean, we've got children who certain information might not be suitable for them. That's why we've got, I think, Dave that books, I think, advertising and foreign films and publications board. So you would need a media that is accountable, that is going to know when to write what and when to say what and how to say it, because the use now of that information is key and critical, that the user must receive the information in the way it was intended. And the way it is intended, it has to be a responsible way. It mustn't be a way that is going to invite some form of either violence or acts of intimidation, things like that. And obviously those evolve from our constitution as a country. Do I see media as free and fair? In the South African context, I think I do. Obviously, I'm talking as a layperson, I'm not a media specialist, but I think they're able to say what they want to say. But how far that goes, I think a person in the media space would be better placed to respond. But from where I'm sitting, I think it's free and fair. They're able to report on the things that they're supposed to report to. So I think our South African media is a little robust, and I think it's a good thing. Thank you.
Thank you very much. Honourable members, is there a member wants to do a follow-up? Okay. Now, Honourable Rose, you don't want it. Honourable members, all of you don't. You're fine. Okay, so you were right. Okay. We want to thank you for indulging us with your responses. You managed within your given time to allow all members to be able to post questions for you, and thanks for that. We're at a point where we'll come back to you as soon as we finalize interviewing everyone else, just to give you an indication how did it go, but we sincerely appreciate your responses. Thank you very much and good luck.
Thank you, Jefferson. Thank you very much, and thank you to all honorable members. I think your questions were highly informative.
Thanks, Mema Jova. Okay, honourable members, we are now remaining with the very last candidate.
I will allow you 5 minutes going through the CV, and then thereafter we can take the last candidate, is Mr. Isaac Samsanga Deping. We can proceed, eh? Members, are you all okay? You need some extra few minutes.
No, that's
okay. We started 25 minutes past. Honorable Magistrates and other members are raising hands.
broadcasting.
Thank you, St. Anthony. Please share with us your understanding of the Media Development and Diversity Act. What can you tell us about the strengths, the weaknesses of that?
I think that if I may be allowed to look at it within a much broader context in answer to your question, broad in the sense that the MDDA Act, which establishes the MDDA, is passed in 2002, and by that time the media landscape was changing. From the period of about the 80s, the 1980s, that is the latter part of the 20th century, the media landscape was changing. And in actual fact, some other writers have referred to it as a revolution, in which it was driven mainly by technological changes. And at the same time, from a political point of view, this was a period of liberalization and deregulation. So the MDDA comes into existence at that particular point in time, considering the fact that this is South Africa, which itself had just emerged or had just become a democracy. The democratic dispensation in South Africa itself was new. If you take 2002 from 1994, if my arithmetic is correct, that's about 8 years. And the MDDA is established 2 years later. The democratic dispensation in South Africa is 10 years old. But MDDA itself did not start to be operational immediately the act was passed, as according to the report of the former CEO. It became operational 2 years down the line in 2004. So MDDA is a very young organization. But to answer in terms of the act itself, my view is that information is pivotal to a vibrant democracy. Now, the interesting thing is that almost all legal instruments, if you take the United Nations structure, it tells something about the freedom of expression and freedom of information and the right to hold views and opinions unhindered. Africa itself, the AU, it has an instrument like that. From a regional point of view, SADC has an instrument specifically relating to freedom of information and freedom of expression. Now, the establishment of the MDDA through the Act in 2002 is in itself aligned to the international instruments of understanding the importance of information. I've mentioned these from international, but in the country itself, South Africa, the Constitution of South Africa, Section 16 of the Constitution of South Africa, also speaks to freedom of information. Now, considering where South Africa comes from and the fact that certain section of the population was marginalized in terms of democratic processes, it then becomes important to have a statutory body which is then intended to address these issues. It is the Constitution of South Africa, as I say, Section 16, speaks to this, primarily freedom of expression,
ably creating an enabling environment wherein each and every member of society have access to information. But I think the important thing here is not only just access to information, but also the capacity and ability to impart information. And this is where the MDA plays.
Thank you very much. Honorable Kekan.
Chalewa Chedison, Tomer Lambert in Benin. I just want to ask you one question or two. And the first one is that what can you do to ensure that media diversity is safeguarded and nurtured? And what different strategy can you deploy in the MDDA to ensure both nurturing and safeguarding? I thank you.
Through you, Mr. Thank you very much for this question. The one is on media diversity. What can one do? I think that this is a difficult question. Difficult in the sense that, for example, let me first say that when MDDA first came into existence, it had a budget, if my memory serves me well, of about 11 million. And I think it then had projects of about 79 projects. At the time, 2013, it had about 499. And a budget of, I think, about 57 million. Now, I'm raising these numbers from the point of view that I have started off by saying that the media landscape is changing. South Africa has had its own challenges, and therefore, my view is that for MDDA to meet these challenges that you are then pointing out, it has to be better resourced. Now, unfortunately, here you have a situation where you have competing interests. Now, would you say you want to invest more money in MDDA in order to be able to fulfill its mandate, or you want to invest more money in health or in education? These are the competing interests. I think that from the very beginning. But I want to say that from what I have seen of the MDDA, its record is quite impressive, considering the resources that it had at its disposal, the number of projects, training, research, etc. Okay, so I would then say, in a way, that there are a number of things that one has to take into consideration here. To what extent will MDDA be empowered with the necessary resources? Because from my own experience as a media person over these years, I have come to understand that information is pivotal. Let me use an example. There's an outbreak of cholera in a rural area somewhere in KZN, and you want to tell the people how to manage cholera. The media comes into play immediately. I'm probably biased in that sense, but I think that this would be the correct approach. So I am very much in favor first and foremost that an institution such as the MTTA is very, very important considering the historical background of South Africa. Right. So I would then, if I were to be a member of MTTA, actually engage with the various stakeholders to promote the view that for this to be a vibrant democracy, as expressed in the Constitution of South Africa, as expressed in the MTTA Act, then I think we've got to do something about the resources at the disposal of the MTTA. The second question is different strategies. Am I correct? The second question is on different strategies. Now, I think that through you, Madam Chair, I think that my approach would be more towards expanding in the area of research. I see here that 5% of the resources on the MTTA were allocated to research. I have already pointed out that the media landscape is changing. All media institutions throughout the world have had to review their strategies and adopt new strategies in order to meet the challenges that have been brought about. The BBC, for example, in terms of its formulation of its strategies, it said the state has quo. The title of that document is "The State Has Quo is Not an Option." So we're dealing with an environment here which is characterized by change. Now, allow me very briefly. I noted that there are certain actions as reflected by the 2013 report of the MTTA. And certain things are said there, amongst which is ownership control and access to information, enhanced ownership. That's the strategy that the MTTA has set for itself between 2013 and 2016. Rather than the number of these. But what I noticed out of this, or what I realized, was that in terms of the program of action of the MTTA, there are certain things which are not there, or at least according to my view. For example, the element of research that I've pointed out, digital migration, changing media environment, and how do you position MTTA to take advantage of these new developments, because whilst on the other hand the changes are in themselves challenging, but they are opportunities. Media, I mean, the barriers to entry actually have now become less and they are cheaper. In terms of time, allow me just to stop there. Maybe this question will come up again and then I will develop.
Yes, I was becoming worried about time and spent on your question. I'm glad that she just brought it to us. Can we proceed to Honorable Zedi?
My name is Dente. What distinctions do you see between print and electronic media? And do you think they serve eight different peoples in society?
Thank you very much, and now for you, Major. The new technologies that have come up are beginning to bear this distinction, because now you're getting into a situation what is referred to as convergence. Actually, the print media at this point in time is a bit worried about its own future. But experience has shown that any new media or technology that comes into existence does not necessarily mean the demise of the other. When television was introduced in the 50s, many people thought that radio was history and began writing obituaries of radio. But it didn't happen that way. Radio still today remains an important media of information. And to a very great extent, I think, because of the advantages, you find that NDA has paid much concentration in terms of the electronic media, especially because of questions of illiteracy, etc. But I would say that in answer to your question, as I've already said, there is a blur. You know, for example, in this small thing here, one has books, one has news, one has all kinds of things, and this is supposed to fall within the category of what is called electronic. But you find print media, and print media is beginning to move more towards this take advantage of the possibilities that are provided by the electronic media. I don't know if I've answered your question. Thank you.
Thanks, Honorable Member. Honorable Lord.
But thank you. You know, I've been going through a CV and very impressive, you know, for socialists like myself. I mean, the Lenin School of Journalism, very, very impressive. Anyway, that is not where I want to go. I know that the Honorable Davis will deal with what the implications of that might be. My question is, it has to do with media and electronic literacy and their importance to the creation of equal citizenship amongst South Africans. And what practical programs do you think MDA could engage in to promote equal citizenship through media literacy and electronic literacy? That's one. Secondly is your critique. And here you would want to demonstrate through either figures or some forms of examples of your analysis of the environment of community media in South Africa in general, but also how it will be impacted by DTT. Thank you very much.
Thank you very much. I know I'm just thinking of this question of socialism and the Lenin School of Journalism. No, very briefly, whilst one, I'm not apologetic about having attended the Lenin School of Journalism, but at the same time, I was also trained in the Netherlands. I was trained in Canada. I was trained in the then GDR. So my experience is fully well-rounded. I have the experience of working in these other countries. But to refer to your question, electronic literacy. That is precisely the reason why I prefaced my answers with the changing media landscape, because I think there are great possibilities that the MDDA can, or the people of South Africa, can take advantage of, because in fact, amongst other things,
The electronic media or the technological, yes, that's the term. The technological changes have actually made things much, much more easier. Now you find people uploading videos on YouTube. You find people exchanging information, sending video clips, either in the form of jokes or information that is valuable. So that is why I would say research becomes very, very important. How can MDDA take advantage of the developments and promote this that you're talking about, the literacy? Secondly, how do we harness the skills of South African people in order to be able to take advantage of these developments? I see that the part of the funds that were used by MDDA involves training. I think it falls under other because they do not give a percentage. But I would say that that is one area that I think we need to concentrate on. But there is also a risk insofar as this is concerned. The commercial media is it's actually now playing a dominant role. And more often, the commercial media does not necessarily invest in training. Rather, it poaches from many people who are exceptional DJs, although I don't often use that term myself, but they prefer to be called DJs, are people who are trained in community radio stations, and they were poached by the various commercial stations, and they've made their mark there. So it is a risk that we need to contend with. But I think training, you cannot then say you are not going to do training because you are afraid that the commercial media will poach. There's one guy who calls it, it's carnivore. He says, there are predators out there. And if we want, that's Adam C., if we want our public service broadcasters as institution to survive, we then need to find a way of actually protecting them, because I think they are actually very, very important. I don't want to go into that, but I do have an ideological question as to whether an organization that is driven by the profit motive can at the same time serve the public interest. Now it depends where you stand on this question. And it's just me thinking aloud about it, really. But many commercial enterprises do say that they are also serving the public interest. It's a debatable question. The last question, I think, is about the critique of analysis of community media. To a great extent, I think community media has suffered from lack of resources. That's the one thing. Secondly, there is an expression in media that content is key. Now, because of queen, maybe. Now, because you don't have the resources, you are unable to generate your own content, especially if you are a media in the rural areas dependent on your resources from an institution like the MDDA, which itself, I would say, also doesn't have
sufficient resources becomes problematic. These are all questions that I think would have to be addressed. But many community radio stations have actually folded because they did not have the means to sustain themselves. And in fact, I think also the act, I think we need to go into the areas of policy to actually redefine these areas like community radio, community television, and to what extent these institutions can actually sustain themselves.
Yes, definitely you're going to run out of time. You'll be in trouble. Just watch the time from now on. Let me proceed, Honorable Madisha.
No, thanks. I think there is a number of other areas that I wanted to raise. But then let me just check something wrong with you. History has proven in the country that, albeit there are excellent policies, that's parliamentary policies, that albeit we have material, we have human resources, we still have very serious problems where people will misuse, will steal, do all these things, and some of these people will be, if you get appointed, of course, the people who you will work with as the members of the board, okay? Now, either nationally or at the lower levels, will you have any capacity really? Do you have the capacity to address that? I am looking here at the issue, Chair, of the administration. Yes, I've understood all that which you have raised, but the administrative part, are you good enough? Can I rise and say, yes, you have the capacity?
Thank you, Chair.
They have to answer it, unfortunately.
Thank you, Dr. Matisha. The question that you are raising is a very real one, as you say, historical experience. But I think that, fortunately, relating specifically to MBBA, it is an institution that has had unqualified audits throughout its existence, which means that there is a point at which you begin. I'm talking specifically to MBBA. I was in my past life, Director of Radio Freedom, we did not have resources. We had to generate those resources from other people. By the time we returned back into the country, we had equipment that was state of the art, and in some countries they actually asked us to leave the equipment behind. We could not get it back. We left it there. But inside the country, I was, as I said, head of public service radio, responsible for 18 of the public service radio stations of the SABC. And in one of the first press statements that Dr. Ngubane said, who was then chairperson of the board of the SABC, said that people say that the SABC has problems, but they seem to think that SABC consists only of television. There is radio, which, and I'm glad you said that, has never had, at least during my tenure of office there, all of these problems. So I would like to say that
My experience is such that I had occasion. The budget of TBS Radio was in the range of about 700 million, and I think we were able to manage it.
Okay, let's proceed, Honorable Davis.
Thank you, Chairperson. I have two questions for you. The first one is about political impartiality. The MDDA Act is very explicit about board members being impartial, and it actually said that board members may not be employees or office bearers of a political organization. So can you just confirm to us that you, whether or not you are a office bearer of any political organization? That's the first question. The second question is about press freedom. Another requirement for board members, they must be committed to freedom of the press. What limits do you think should be placed on press freedom, if any? Thank you.
Well, the first thing is the answer to the first question is I am not an officer.
Just press the mic, Mr. Intendant.
I'm sorry. I'm not an office bearer of any political organization. I hope that answers the question very briefly.
Secondly, press freedom. A very tricky area. Not tricky really insofar as my views are concerned on it, but tricky in the sense that you have various stakeholders prepared to defend their terms. But I think South Africa has been a very vibrant democracy, and the media has been able to write stories about leaders, about political parties, which in other countries would not see the light of day. I think the contentious area here is the area, particularly because the broadcast media has always been regulated through the Act, whereas the print media regulated differently. Now, at some point, the ANC spoke about the Media Appeals Tribunal. There was a lot of discussion around that, but it has not actually gone to the extent of implementing that. But at the same time, the National Editor, the National Forum of Editors, found it necessary to actually review its own regulatory mechanism. And I think it was they went to the extent of getting the late Judge Pius Langer, and because they said, okay, fine, let us engage, let us discuss. But these are say policy matters, even though maybe they have been mentioned, but there hasn't been any move towards the implementation of that. I think the continuous engagement in so far as these areas are concerned. I do not think that my own personal view at this point would matter much, because I'm into policy. I'm very interested. I'm studying policy right now. With the University of South Africa, and it's an area that I'm very much interested in, and all over the world the practice has been that more the print media has self-regulatory mechanisms, but that has been the practice almost all over the world, so it really depends as to the extent to which one would say, are they actually doing what they are supposed to do as a safe regulator? But that also includes research in itself.
Okay.
Okay, thanks. I'm proceeding, and the last question will come from Honorable Zotik.
Thank you, Chairperson. Good morning, Mr. Zotik. Still good morning. I think it's still good morning. Taking from the information you have shared with us regarding financial management, so you'll agree with me that there's never been a time when government has resources in abundance. And when it comes to his delivery, at all times, demand exceeds the supply. How would you manage with rural development, which is a priority in government, to assist the poor communities with a small budget that we have? And you said correctly that MDGA will need, reasonable funding for it to implement its mandate. But I say that at all times demand exceeds the supply, and we don't have sufficient resources. But we need to do something to develop rural areas. How will you apply, your skill that you have demonstrated to assist us to improve the lives of the poor in rural areas?
I think that's a very, very important question, especially in the light of the state of affairs and conditions of the communities in the rural areas out there. I think it's a question of priorities. How do you prioritize with the limited resources at your disposal? How do you prioritize and in terms of the allocation of your resources? I would like to say once again that I believe very strongly that these technological changes have certain advantages which can be used by rural communities. We only need to find out the extent of those advantages and how best we can then utilize. I do think that there is a possibility that the rural communities, which are at this point poor, can be assisted to develop in terms of this. But I don't think it's just only an area that pertains to government. I think we then need to have a public-private partnership here, because in part, the problem with the underdevelopment of the rural areas is because there are no industries that are situated there. Let me just thinking aloud. Give you an example. If you have the maize triangle that's producing maize in those areas, but you have the milling company in Johannesburg, and therefore the revenue that's generated there is then going to Johannesburg, whereas I'm talking a certain level of decentralization, and again, I'm not an expert in some of these areas. But something says to me, if you were to have the milling companies being situated at the point where the maize is produced and then be transported to the areas of need, this would also assist towards the generation of funds for those rural areas, and therefore the private sector would come handy in terms of the development of those areas. But specifically regarding the MDDA, I think it's a question of prioritization in terms of the resources that it has at its disposal. Which areas do you prioritize? And from what I've seen in terms of the operations of the MDDA up until this far, it has given a lot of priority. Most of the projects that have been undertaken by MDDA are in the rural areas.
think we are right on time, only have 2 minutes remaining. Is there any member wants to do a follow up? One of the little closes and has long been up. Honorable Lozi, because I didn't hear what Honorable Malisha said. Honorable Lozi asked, then Honorable Malisha will come.
No. So there's a big problem of deployment and so on and so forth with regards to these things. So don't you want to be very clear about your relationship at this stage with the ruling party or any other political organization?
I thought it would be a different question. With that one, I think he did answer a question that relates to that. You want to take that?
So very briefly, being in a political organization, I mean, I've been, it's unavoidable. From a very early age, I was in SASO before I was in the ANC. I think what we're talking about here is professionalism. Does your belonging to a political party necessarily compromise your professionalism? I think that's what we're talking about here. And I've been in the SABC, which is a public institution, and at no stage was my professional conduct compromised by my being a member of the ANC.
Hold on, I will listen now. Just one sentence. Are you
waiting? Just in terms of that, the other members, Honorable Malisha was asking if Mr. Tenten is waking, and he says no. So he's asking, what are you eating? So it shows that we have reached the end of the interview. Okay, Honorable members, thanks for the questions, and Mr. Tenten, thanks for the audience. We appreciate it. We will finalize because we're the last candidate, and we will definitely get back to all of you in terms of how we've worked out who's appointed, and thank you very much. We wish you the best.
Thank you very much.
Thanks.